Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about America and the world. This is what you will hear on our program. Listen for reports from Katie Weaver and Ann Ball. Next is our English learning program, Ask a Teacher. Then you'll hear our American Stories program. But first, this report.
The U.S. community of Wolcott, Connecticut does not have a lot of crime. But when its police chief heard about a chance to provide doorbell cameras to some local homes, he did not wait. The police force worked with the camera's manufacturer to give homeowners the devices for free. The cameras offer a wide field of vision from wherever they are set up. Homeowners get notifications on their wireless phones with video images if the doorbell rings or the device's sensors observe a person or a passing car. So far, the cameras have found more wild animals than criminals in Wolcott, a town of 16,000 people. But Police Chief Ed Stevens still likes the idea. "Anything that helps keep the town safe, I'm going to do it," he said.
But as more police agencies join with the company known as Ring, the partnerships are raising concerns. Ring is part of Amazon, the American technology business. Critics say that the systems turn neighborhoods into places of non-stop surveillance. They also say the cameras create suspicion that falls heavier on minority groups. Chris Gilliard is an English professor at Macomb Community College in Michigan. He says Ring and other technologies like it can harden racial barriers. Amazon is profiting off of fear, he said. Part of the plan, he added, seems to be selling the cameras where the fear of crime is more real than the actual existence of crime.
Police say the cameras can serve as a digital neighborhood watch. Some police have chosen to simply use Ring's Neighbors software program, which urges users to share videos of unusual activity. Other government agencies are offering subsidies or other financial assistance, matched by Ring, on hundreds of discounted cameras. The California community of Arcadia, near Los Angeles, has spent $50,000 to offer discounts on 1,000 cameras. Several nearby communities take part in similar programs. Police officers can observe a heat map that shows the general area where cameras are set up, but they do not see a camera's actual position. If police want a video, they must contact Ring to see if the homeowner is willing to share, said Jennifer Brutus. She works as an analyst for the Arcadia Police Department. Arcadia started its program at the end of 2017. In the following year, the city reported a 25% decrease in home burglaries, Brutus said. It is hard to say how much of that is directly related to Ring, but she said the devices do help to reduce crime. Ring would not say how many communities had such partnerships. Sharing video is always voluntary and privacy is protected, noted the company and police. Bridget Gorham is a spokeswoman for Ring. There is nothing required of homeowners who participate in the subsidies, and their identity and data remain private, she said. Realistically, though, if police want video for an investigation, they can seek a court's approval.
Tech industry expert Carolina Milanese says that working with police is a very smart move by Ring. She added that it is a missed opportunity for competitors, including Google's Nest and smaller companies, such as Arlo Technologies and SimpliSafe. Back in Wolcott, Ernie Field won a free Ring camera and said he had to register for the software. Now he gets notifications on his phone when cars drive by. And he gets a short video when his daughter comes home from school. I don't know if there's more crime now, or we just know about it more because of social media, he said. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
Kate Snyder has been living in the same house in Severn, Maryland, for more than 18 years.
I raised my son here. It was a beautiful place to raise a child. Now I'm on my own and still enjoying it.
But as the years pass, the house needs many repairs. Snyder, who is retired and still works two part-time jobs, does not have the money to pay for repairs. Enter Group Cares, a Christian-based aid organization. Each year, the group sends hundreds of teenagers on service trips across the United States. The young people repair homes and provide other help. One such team of teens is spending a week repairing Snyder's house. They're going to put in new stairs for me, she said happily, and it needed paint desperately. Blocks away, other teens are working on Ursula Brett's home. They are removing wallpaper and preparing to paint the house. More than 400 teenagers from all over the U.S. take part in the service trips. They spend 1 week of their summer vacation fixing homes in the day and sleeping on the floor of local Christian religious centers at night. Eric Lowy, spokesperson for Group Cares, says teens work at 30 sites. He says they work in groups of five and are guided and supervised by adult volunteers.
We provide adults, leaders, who are always around on the sites helping students to be able to learn skills that they wouldn't necessarily have from home.
Both young people and adult volunteers raise money for the camp. Local people provide money as well. It pays for food, sleep sites, and material costs. Lowy says when we come to a resident, we can say, we're here to help you, to provide the repairs, but we're going to do that at no cost. The teens working in homes in Severn were part of the Chesapeake Bay Camp. Director Barry Oren says they arrive as strangers. We put them in crews with people they've never met before. Then they go out and work on somebody's home they not only never met before, but also probably will never see again. The idea that they are stepping out of their comfort zone is huge for them, he said. It gives them an opportunity to be part of the team. Very quickly, almost instantly, they learn how to do projects together. This summer, the Chesapeake Bay Camp teens put in 7,650 service hours. All of a sudden, it starts to make sense, Oren said.
Oh, there are people that don't live like I do. There are people that I can help. They're learning about how to communicate, how to express needs and wants, how to become empathetic.
The service group also holds two Christian religious services a day. We're really geared toward helping students, 12 through 17-year-olds, to be able to know God's love for them, Lowe said, and to be able to share this love, not necessarily by preaching, but by showing that they care for people in the community. Camp organizers say the free repairs help homeowners save money and provide the young people with a priceless experience. I'm Katie Weaver.
The percentage of female students nominated by U.S. lawmakers for admission to U.S. military academies has been rising over the last 25 years. But men are still nearly three times more likely than women to get a nomination, says a study released Tuesday. A member of Congress must nominate most applicants to the Naval Academy, the Air Force Academy, and the Military Academy at West Point. The schools provide a cost-free education, then require graduates to serve a number of years in the armed forces. Currently, women represent about 27% of Naval Academy students, 22% of Air Force Academy cadets, and 22% of students at West Point. However, women are able to hold nearly all jobs in the armed forces. Representatives of some lawmakers say the numbers of female students are low because only a small number of women apply. But Lori Manning, Director of Government Operations for the Service Women's Action Network, says congressional offices should change their recruiting efforts. She believes the number of female students at the academies should agree more with the increased role for women in the military. I'm Ann Ball.
Have you ever felt uneasy at a funeral because you weren't sure what to say to the grieving family? Not to worry. Many people experience this. On today's Ask a Teacher, Swan from Vietnam asks, Dear VOA, how can I express my sympathy at a funeral? Thanks. Dear Swan, I am so sorry for your loss. That is one example of a common and caring thing you can say. In Western culture, people traditionally show sympathy at funerals in two ways, by giving flowers and by offering kind words to the people most affected by the death. To show sympathy before or after a funeral, many people have flowers or a plant delivered to the grieving family. Other people bring flowers to the funeral itself. But some families may ask people to give money to a charity they identify instead. If the family says what they want, it's important to follow their wishes. Next, even though it feels uncomfortable, always speak to the family of the deceased at a funeral, memorial, or visitation. Avoid saying more than necessary. You need only a few simple and caring words. Here are some choices.
I am so sorry for your loss. Your mother, husband, was loved by many.
You and your family will be in my thoughts and prayers.
I wish I had the right words. Just know that I care.
I don't know how you feel, but I'm here to help in any way I can.
My favorite memory of your mother, husband, is...
There are also a few things to avoid saying at funerals. Here are some examples.
He is in a better place now.
You will feel better soon.
At least she lived a long life.
At least she didn't suffer much.
God only gives you what you can handle.
Though your intentions are good, such comments may be received as uncaring or insensitive. It's almost never easy to express sympathy to a person or family for the loss of their loved one. But it is usually worse to say nothing. And saying some of the kind words you learned today will likely be appreciated more than you know. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Alice Bryant.
There is a certain hotel on Broadway that is very pleasant in the summer. Not many people have heard about it. It is wide and cool. Its rooms have walls of dark wood. There are green trees around it and soft winds. It has all the pleasures of mountain living and none of the pains. You will eat better fish there than you could catch for yourself in the streams and hills. You will have better meat than a hunter brings home from the forest. A few have discovered this cool spot in the hot summer of New York. You will see these few guests eating dinner in the hotel restaurant. They are happy to be there, and happy to know that they are very few. They feel especially wise because they have found this delightful place. More waiters than necessary are always near. They bring what is wanted before anyone asks for it. The pleasing distant noise of Broadway sounds like running water in a forest. At every strange footstep, the guests turn quickly and look. They are afraid that the restless pleasure seekers will find their hotel and destroy its pleasant quiet. And so these few live during the hot season. They enjoy the delights of mountain and seashore. All is brought to them in their Broadway hotel. This summer, a lady came to the hotel giving this name.
Madame Louise d'Arcy Beaumont.
The name was like a name in the story of a great romance. And Madame Beaumont was the kind of lady the Hotel Lotus loved. She was beautiful, and her manner was very fine. Everyone wished to serve her. The other guests believed that, as a guest, she was perfection. This perfect guest did not often leave the hotel. In this, she was like the other guests of the Hotel Lotus. To enjoy that hotel, one needed to forget the city. New York might have been miles away. At night, sometimes one might go out, but during the hot day, one remained in the cool shade of the Lotus. Madame was alone in the Hotel Lotus. She was alone as a queen is alone because of her high position. She rose from bed late in the morning. She was then a sweet, soft person who seemed to shine quietly. But at dinner, she was different. She would wear a beautiful dress. I cannot find words fine enough to tell about it. Always there were red flowers at her shoulder. When the head waiter saw a dress like this, he met it at the door. You thought of Paris when you saw it, and of the theater, and of old romances. A story about Madame Beaumont was told among the guests in the Hotel Lotus. It was said that she was a woman who had traveled all over the world. It was said that she knew the most important people everywhere. It was said that in her white hands she held the future of certain nations. It was no surprise, they said, that such a lady should choose the Hotel Lotus. It was the most desirable and the most restful place in America during the heat of summer. On the third day of Madame Beaumont's stay in the hotel, a young man entered as a guest. His clothes were quiet, but good. His face was pleasant. His expression was that of a man who had traveled and could understand the world. He said that he would remain 3 or 4 days. He asked about the sailing of certain ships. He seemed to like this hotel the best of all he had known. The young man put his name down on the list of hotel guests. Harold Farrington. It was a name with a fine sound, and the young man belonged perfectly in the quiet life of the Lotus. In one day he became like all the other guests. Like them, he had his table and his waiter. He also had the same fear that the wrong people might suddenly discover this hotel and destroy its peace. After dinner on the next day, Madame Beaumont dropped something as she passed Harold Farrington's table. He picked it up and, following her, returned it. He spoke only a few quiet words as he did this, and she was pleased by his good manners. She knew that he was a gentleman. Guests of the Lotus seemed to understand each other very easily. Perhaps it was the result of having discovered this Broadway hotel. Guests felt sure that only especially fine people would enjoy the cool delights of the Lotus. Now, very quickly, a sudden friendship grew between Farrington and Madame Beaumont. They stood and talked for a few moments.
"I have seen too much of the usual summer hotels," said Madame Beaumont, with a small but sweet smile. "Why go to the mountains or the seashore? We cannot escape noise and dust there. The people who make noise and dust follow us there."
"Even on the ocean," said Farrington sadly. "Those same people are all around us. What shall we do when they discover the Lotus?"
"I hope they don't discover the Lotus this week," said Madame. "I only know one other place I like as well. It is the beautiful home of a prince in the mountains in Europe."
"The best people," said Farrington, "are seeking for the quiet places like this one, where they can escape the crowds."
"I promise myself 3 more days of this delightful rest," said Madame Beaumont. "The next day, my ship sails."
Harold Farrington's eyes showed that he was sorry. "I too must leave then," he said. "But I am not sailing for Europe."
"We cannot stay here forever, though it is so delightful,"
said Madame Beaumont.
I like it better than my usual life, which is too full of people. I shall never forget my week in the Hotel Lotus.
Nor shall I, said Farrington in a low voice. And I shall never like the ship that carries you away. On their last evening, the two sat together at a little table. A waiter brought them something cool to eat. Madame Beaumont was wearing the same beautiful dress. She seemed thoughtful. When she had finished eating, she took out a dollar.
Mr. Farrington,
she said with a smile that everyone in the Lotus loved,
I want to tell you something. I am going to leave early tomorrow morning because I must go back to work. I work selling women's clothes at Casey's shop. That dollar is all the money I have. I won't have any more till I get paid at the end of the week. You're a real gentleman, and you've been good to me. I wanted to tell you before I went. For a year, I've been planning to come here. Each week, I put aside a little of my pay so I would have enough money. I wanted to live one week like a rich lady. I wanted to get up in the morning when I wished. I wanted to be served by waiters. I wanted to have the best of everything. Now I've done it, and I've been happier than I ever was before. And now, I'm going back to work. I wanted to tell you about it, Mr. Farrington, because I thought you liked me, and I liked you. This week I've told you many things that weren't true. I told you things I've read about. They never happened to me. I've been living in a story. It wasn't real. I wanted you to think I was a great lady. This dress I'm wearing, it's the only pretty dress I own. I haven't paid for it yet. I'm paying for it a little at a time. The price was $75. It was made for me at O'Dowd and Levinsky's shop. I paid $10 first, and now I have to pay $1 a week until it's all paid. And that's all I have to say, Mr. Farrington, except that my name is Mamie Siviter, and not Madame Beaumont. Thank you for listening to me. This dollar is the dollar I'm going to pay for my dress tomorrow. And now, I'll go up to my room.
As Harold Farrington listened, his face had not changed. When she had finished, he took out a small book and began to write in it. Then, he pulled out the small page with his writing on it and gave it to her. And he took the dollar from her hand. I go to work, too, tomorrow morning, he said. And I decided to begin now. That paper says you've paid your dollar for this week. I've been working for O'Dowd and Levinsky for 3 years. Strange, isn't it? We both had the same idea. I always wanted to stay at a good hotel. I get $20 a week. Like you, I put aside a little money at a time until I had enough. Listen, Mamie, will you go to the pleasure park on Coney Island with me on payday? The girl who had been Madame Eloise d'Arcy Beaumont smiled.
I'd love to go, Mr. Farrington. Coney will be all right. Although, we did live with rich people for a week.
They could hear the night noises of the hot city. Inside the Hotel Lotus, it was cool. The waiter stood near, ready to get anything they asked for. Madame Beaumont started up to her room for the last time. And he said, "Forget that Harold Farrington, will you? McManus is the name. James McManus. Some call me Jimmy."
"Good night, Jimmy,"
said Madame.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program on the Voice of America.